Well, we're back tonight live after, 14 months doing Zoom at home, and it was great. I met people from all over the world, and some people came for a while and then stopped, and some people are coming now, but we met so many people from the United States. It was really fun, wasn't it? It was really fun. And tonight, I'm going to do, I think I've done this before, but I don't know that I've ever recorded this. It's kind of a review of the big book goals, why we studied the book, what's the purpose of this, and a few things about the process of the change and experience, spiritual experience, the disease, and just a lot of useful information. So the first page of the handout is big book goals. What's the purpose of the big book? Why do we study it? And it says goal one is the problem, goal two is the solution, and goal three is the action necessary for recovery to get the spiritual experience. Now the big book starts with the foreword, and you don't have to turn there, but the foreword to the first edition. Remember, this was written in 1939, and before this book was written, there was no AA, right? And there was no hope for us. I mean, where did you go? And it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered, notice the word recovered, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. They had recovered from what was a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Now, it wasn't a hopeless state of mind and body because they had found a solution, and that's what recovered means. They weren't obsessed with fighting the drinking every day, and they'd had a spiritual relationship with God, and they had a power in their life to live. And so it's not hopeless for us today because of that. And they wrote, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, and that's in italics, is the main purpose of the book. So if you want to recover from alcoholism, they're going to show you precisely what they did. Now, if you have a plan and you want to write a book, that'll be great. But if you don't have a plan that's worked, you might want to try this. That's all they're saying. They didn't say that they had the only answer, but they had recovered and they wrote this book and they wrote precise directions. And then on page 20 of the big book, which was not page 20 originally because the doctor's opinion was page 1, but they say, doubtless you're curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, if you're new, that's a good question, right? Right? And if you're old, you want to know how. So. And it says, if you're an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may be already asking, what do I have to do? And then I wrote next to that, next. Because Sandy Beach says the only question you're supposed to ask all the time of your sponsor is, what do I need to do next? Because if I'm doing what I think I need to do, that got me a wristband. That got me here. And it says, it's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done. And then on page 44, it says, lack of power, that was my dilemma. Dilemma is two choices, especially equally undesirable. And it said we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Stu, you want to say? Obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? You see, when you get to page 45, and we'll go through this on this how the book's laid out, you realize that you have no power to keep from drinking, ever. No defense against the first drink. You want to close that door? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. And that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral, and it means we're going to talk about God. And remember, the power that we're seeking is God. And then if we read how it works at every meeting, anybody ever heard how it works read before? No? Okay. This is a new group. They've never heard it before. All right, I'm not that funny tonight. It says, on the second paragraph, if you've decided you want what we have, and they had recovered. Now, Jimmy, don't give me a hard time. We're alive, and we're just, I have to get back in the groove, okay? Give me a chance. We're having fun tonight. We haven't seen each other live for a while. If you decide what you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So they had recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And if you want what they have and are willing to go to length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And then they tell you, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. That's what it was in the original. They took your out. And so that's the big book is a treasure map to God, a relationship with God. And if you look at this handout, the problem is described in Doctor's Opinion and in Bill's story, and it's that we're powerless. We're going to look at that in some of these other pages that follow. And the doctor's opinion was Dr. Silkworth, which was the problem. And Bill's story is a message of hope. We just finished studying that on Sunday night. I might add that I've been through it many times, but the last time through, we really got a lot more out of it. I've probably gone through it 20, 25 times. It's a message of hope of someone who had a hopeless condition of mind and body, and what they did, what happened to them, and what they were like. Then the solution is described as power. If you don't have any power not to drink or use, and you can't manage your own life, then you need power. And there's a solution, is a chapter that talks about the solution. Now, if you could turn to page 24, I'm going slow, so I don't confuse anybody, but it's very clever. If you look at page 24 and 25, on page 24 they get to the point in the book where they say that the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Anybody relate to that? And you never get it back. So-called willpower has become practically non-existent. We are able at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink, and you should really read that in the first person. Now, if you look on the page, right across from that, in squiggly writing, it says there's a solution. So they end this first part of this chapter where they talk about loss of choice, loss of control. And then they talk about the solution here, which is the leveling of our pride, the self-searching, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. And it says, when we had come to believe in the hopelessness of futility of life as we had been living it, and a lot of people when you come in, I don't know about you, but it was pretty hopeless and futile. It was pretty bad when I came in. I had a lot of fear. My life was, I still had a job, I'm still working, but everything was caving in. And when I was approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for me but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. And then it says, the great fact is this, just this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized my whole attitude towards life, my fellows, and towards God universe. And here's the central fact of my life today, it's true, is the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. It's miraculous that I'm here today on what, April 28, 2001? And 19 years ago, I was on my knees and I gave up completely. We're going to talk about that surrender. And it says the central fact is the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for me which I could not do for myself. And it's a great promise. Anybody like that? That's the deal. And so that's the solution in chapter 2 from the handout. It says under solution, chapter 2 talks about Roland Hazard going to, Roland Hazard going to Dr. Young and getting the therapy for a year and then going out and drinking 2 or 3 days later. Went back to Dr. Young, and Dr. Young didn't realize you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one case recover. How's that? So Roland said, not even one. He says that there have been these phenomena throughout history where people have had a total rearrangement of their whole attitude and outlook to life. Their whole personality has changed. And what he was describing is going from self-centered to a God-centered person and having a spiritual change. And Rowan says, well, I go to church. He says, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a total rearrangement of your personality. And then he went to New York, and he met Dr. Shoemaker from the Oxford group, and then he went to get rescue Ebbie Thatcher from going to prison in Vermont. And then Ebbie Thatcher went to New York in 1934, worked the steps, the Oxford group steps, in 60 days, and then told he had to witness. And he went and found Bill W., and we're here today. Think about that. So that's what's there in Solution. Chapter 3 about the solution is more about alcoholism, is about the queer mental twist that occurs right before you take the first drink. Now, is everybody here an alcoholic? Then you kept putting your hand in a hot flame. What are you, idiots? But that's what we do. Right before we drink, we can't see what it's going to do to us, only for us, right, Corey? We can't see because our mind has blocked it, because we only want the effect of alcohol or the drug. It dominates us. And willpower won't work because it can't see anything wrong with it right before you do it. You can only think what it's going to do for you, not to you. Anybody relate to that? Anybody get excited when they get to the, going to the liquor store? Yeah, you start to feel better. You know the relief's coming. The relief from what? Living a life separated from God. Living a life of self-centeredness. And then we agnostics is step 2 in the solution. Step 1 is powerless over alcohol, that our lives are unmanageable. We admit that self. Step 2 is found on page 47. Do you mind if I do this, show you some of these things tonight? Is that okay? Is that all right? So 47 is where step 2 is. Now, they've covered 2 or 3 pages to get to this. And they say, we ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe? And believe means accept something is true, or I'm even willing to believe that there's a power greater than me. It's not that complicated, is it? But you know, we're going to read in the second step proposition exercise from Dr. Henry Thibault that when an alcoholic can turn away from himself completely and believe that there's something else that can help him and run his life, that's a major change. That's the ship changing complete direction. And for a lot of people can never do that. They cannot really, really believe that something can fix them or is capable or is more capable than they are. And it says, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, will you emphatically assure him he's on his way? Is repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And so that's the solution, is God. And the problem is powerless. And then the action necessary recovery and how it works is step 3 and 4. We make a decision. We're going to talk about that in the subsequent handout. Then step 4 is how we find what's blocking us from God. Into action is where we admit to ourselves, God, and another human being the exact nature of what's blocking us. 6 and 7 is where we're willing to change, we're willing to practice a new way. Everybody picked up their spiritual checklist, right? And we want to live the personality of God, not my personality. You get it? And so then 8-9 is where we make amends, and page 84 to 88 is where I live each day in steps 10-11. And then working with others is how I work with another alcoholic, and then the chapters we are covering to Wise, Family Afterwards, Vision for You, to Employers, is how we practice these principles in our affairs. I might add that we don't have enough meetings where we discuss how are we practicing the principles in our affairs, because that's what we have to do if we're going to change, if our lives are going to change. What are we practicing? Am I practicing God's character or mine each day? And you inventory at night for how well you did, and during the day, if you, in step page 84, tells us how we get back to the spirit when we get away from the spirit. So then we'll go to the next page of the handout. For those who are looking, it's a simple chart. I'll go through it. It's not that complicated, but it's got a lot of information. The road chart to decision. Step one is the problem, lack of power. Right? Right, Angie? And what is our problem? The mental obsession and the physical allergy. We're going to look at that a little bit on the next couple of sheets. But I have an allergy to alcohol. Once it's in my body, I'm doomed. I cannot stop. And then my mind will tell me sober, you need a drink. Anybody have that happen to you? Yeah. And then you said, no, I can't drink. And then you say, but I need a drink. And then you're off and running. Has anybody taken a lie detector test at 9 in the morning when they say, I'm never going to drink again? And the FBI says, he's good. He's good. 11 o'clock, you're in jail. How'd that happen? Because we can't see the truth. Then step two, the solution, these are the three steps. The first is to admit that you don't have the power to fix that ever. And then the second step in the road chart is the solution, which is the fellowship supports us. We're all supporting each other tonight, right? We're all alcoholics sitting together. Well, sorry, but that won't fix you. It gives you the support you need to find someone who can take you through the steps to the solution. Because the solution is the spiritual experience, the change, the experience God in your life. Then the decision that you make in the third step before you start doing the action steps is the turning point. Now, there are three surrenders in AA. The first surrender is not your own. If you think you surrendered when you came here, then you thought you had a choice. And if you think you have a choice to surrender, then you'll decide that you don't need to surrender. But I was surrendered. I was clearly surrendered. When I woke up at 8 in the morning, I wasn't going to surrender. I just figured, boy, I'll probably go on and die. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen, but none of it was good. But you know how we are. We just, I'll deal with that later. And at 2 o'clock, I was down on my knees, and I asked God to help me, and I went, met sister, and cried. She held me, and I'm here today. I was surrendered. Remember, Bill W. said, quicksand surround him. Alcohol was his master. He didn't wake up and say that. He was. And I was surrendered. And I think that's why a lot of people don't make it. They're not surrendered. They know things are bad, so they come here. I'll go to AA. But they're not completely defeated. That's what we talk about, complete defeat. And we're defeated by alcohol. It's beaten us. It says driven to our knees. And so think about that. So when you work with a new guy, is he really defeated or not? Hitting bottom is when you realize you're done. You're surrendered. You're defeated. You're on the mat. You're knocked out. You can't get up. And then you know what? You lie there. You say, wow, I'm glad that battle's over. And then you turn to God and you get on your way. You see what I mean? We're surrendered. And people don't realize it. And you can't make somebody surrendered. And my sponsor Cliff would hear people talk and he'd mumble. He was such a great guy. Jimmy knows him, right? He'd go like this, Jimmy. Jimmy and I used to sit and eat with him at Mandino's. Boy, we love those wings. Oh my God. And we put him out of business, by the way. But he'd go, give him more booze. See, we have to be defeated by our disease. Then the second surrender is the third step. That's what they're talking about, the turning point. Are you going to stop playing God or not? Why? It's not going to work. Now, it says on page 60 that a life run on self-will will never work. Now, what do they mean by that? It's never going to work. And then they give you two pages describing how it doesn't work. And then you read it with people and they say, boy, it doesn't work. And then they say the third step, prayer. But then they don't do anything. You see, if I don't face and be rid of the things that are blocking me from God working in my life, my decision that God's going to be my director won't do any good. But we do sign a contract in step three with God. And I make all my sponsees write it in their book. And the contract that says is this. We have a new employer. It's God. I work for God now. We all do. Who else do we think we work for? And then it says, he will give me everything I need. Is that too complicated? Mm-hmm. He'll give me everything I need. And all I have to do is stay close to him and do his work well. Well, how do you stay close to him and do his work well? That's the thing. And that's what steps 4 through 9 and then living in 10, 11, and 12 are. How we stay close to our Creator, conscious contact. Remember, we want to improve our conscious contact in step 11, right? And the steps are how I unblock myself from God, and then 10, 11 is how I do it every day. And so the decision won't do any good unless you follow through. So there's a turning point here, and on the handout, it says you can turn. You can either believe and accept spiritual help, or you can disbelieve and continue drinking and stand to your death. Now, where's that in the book? Does anybody remember where that is? It's in the book. I've seen it. It says on page 44, it says, to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Right? If you're hopeless, to continue doing what you're doing, you're screwed. Right? Mary's nodding her head. She agrees with me, right? But here's the problem. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Now, this is a very complicated sentence. It took me years to figure it out. Because they're not saying that you have one door doomed in alcoholic death or live a spiritual life or a difficult choice. Now, Sandy Beach does a comedy routine where, you know, they had that show where you're solving the problems and you get to call somebody for help. So the alcoholic is, door number one is alcoholic death. Door number two is live a spiritual life. And the guy goes, you get one call. He says, okay, I'm going to call my doctor. He says, doctor, how bad is an alcoholic death? You get it? But here's the deal. It's not that they're not easy alternatives. The alcoholic who cannot see that he only has two alternatives, he cannot see that there's no other door. He's going to try this. He's going to do this. He's always got a plan. But he hasn't understood that unless he gives up completely and accepts spiritual help, he's not going to make it. Does this make sense? And so it's the facing it. Now, have anybody ever, we've all discussed it, we've heard how it works before, right? 18 trillion times, right? It says, there are those who cannot or will not do the simple program. Wow. Why? They're constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Well, what does that mean? Here's what it means. It means that they can't face that they only have two doors. They can't face that either they're going to go on and die or they're going to have to accept spiritual help. They can't see it. They're constitutionally incapable of seeing that they're defeated. And I didn't realize that for a long time. I've worked with a lot of people. But I could see it now when I look back. I was defeated. And I was willing to do whatever it took. Now, I wasn't, you know, the choir boy for AA and perfect, but I was willing to do whatever they told me because I didn't want to live anymore the way I was. And that's the turning point. Can you see it? Now, if you're surrendered, if you're truly surrendered in step one, then the step three decision's pretty easy. But the step three decision, when people tell me they're working on step three, I don't know what you work on. You just decide. Are you done? Are you done playing God? Well, now I have to think about that. Well, why? Well, how's playing God helped you? How's your life? And so it should be a natural consequence of one and two, the decision, if you've truly been defeated in one. Now, if you're not defeated in one, you're not so sure about this decision. And people don't understand it. They make it more complicated than it is. But then remember what the big book says. This is a crucial and vital step. And remember after the third step prayer, you know what they say? They're pretty clever. They're pretty funny, aren't they? It says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready to completely abandon ourselves to him. You see, that's after they've gone all through this in the prayer. Are you ready to completely give yourself to God? Of course, we're never completely ready to abandon ourselves 100%, but we want to do it the best we can. And so that's what the first three steps are all about. Now here, and I'm not going to talk for 2 hours tonight. Everybody breathe a sigh of relief. Here's a chart here, Angie, that looks complicated, Carrie and you guys, but I'm going to make it very simple. Over here is the mental illness. Over here is the physical illness. This is normal people. Normal people can drink. Isn't that amazing? Have you ever been with a normal person and they drink and they don't drink at all? Or they don't order a second? Have you ever noticed these people? Where they leave some in their glass. Isn't that something? Yeah, really strange. All right, but the physical is the one who cannot safely drink alcohol. He's allergic. Why? They have this chart here, this that you get this level of acetone and it creates a craving. I don't know that that's true. I don't think anybody really knows why we need the second drink. But if it comes in my body, I'm going to want a second one. Has anybody ever thought about drinking? You don't think about getting one of those little bottles, do you? Yeah. And I was on the cruise ship where they had unlimited booze, and they asked me why I wouldn't drink the toast. It's a little bit. I said, you don't understand. There's not enough booze on the ship. And they moved their chair away from me, you know. This guy is really strange, but it's true. We don't go and buy one drink. But anyway, once you drink, then it sets off the craving, the well-known spree. And then it says emerges remorseful. Anybody emerge remorseful after they drink? Filled with guilt, remorse. Anybody have that? But guess what? You're sober now. You've stopped drinking. You're going to quit. You come, guess what? You're restless. You're irritable and you're discontented. Why? Because you have a spiritual illness. You're separated from God. You're running the show. You don't like the way things are working out. You're not getting what you want. They're not doing what I want. They don't like me. They're not giving me enough homage. Oh my. Anybody else ever had any of these thoughts? Or they're going to take something away. You know, it's endless crap in our heads. We get fearful. Anybody get afraid? We get angry. We get self-pity. Anybody ever have self-pity? Alcoholics are so much self-pity when they come in here. They don't even know what it is. It's like the water they're swimming in, right? It's an obsession with your own troubles. And then guess what happens? Now, this is a key. There's a thermometer here. Now, this is the key. You're an alcoholic, right? You stop drinking. You're sober. You don't have a solution. You don't have a relationship with God. You haven't worked the steps. Guess what happens? You start building up emotions. The emotions start building up. You see these lines on the thermometer? This is a great example. And what level do your emotions have to build up to you to drink? And they call that when you're at step zero. How long can you go without working the steps? And your emotions sober, separated from God, build up before you can drink again. You see? And then, like here, when they're this level in the thermometer, you don't have to drink yet. But when you get to this level, you have to drink. Willpower will work only up till that level. You get it? And you see, this is why people don't make it. Because their emotions built up, they don't haven't worked the steps, they don't have a relationship with God, they don't know how to be free of fear, free from anger, they don't know how to make amends and live in the world with people, they don't know how to watch for their separation from God, they don't know how to pray and meditate, they don't have the power. And they drink, and then they take one drink, I'll just have one, and then they're over here again. And then they come to AA and they cry. And then we say, well, you need to work the steps. You need to get a sponsor. You need to read the big book. But you need to do it. But they don't do it. They think it's a good idea, but for some reason they don't do it. I don't know why. And then they live sober without alcohol, but then their emotions build up. And then they get, and we don't know if it's the same level this time or not. But then they drink again. And then it goes over, and that cycle is repeated. And that's the disease concept of alcoholism. But it can be treated. You have to treat this. You have to treat your emotions. You have to learn how to live emotionally sober. You have to learn how to live with God so you can live with the world. You have to learn how to live on the right-hand side of this card and practice God's character, not your own. But you don't know how to do that until you've done 4 and 5, I believe, out of the big book. And we're going to talk about 6 and 7. On Saturday, how we do that constantly. So this is good, isn't it? Yeah. This is really, really good. It makes it clear. And then maybe I'll do another page or not. I don't know. I'm going to do one more page. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. This is a great, great chart. I got this from Joe and Charlie. I got these, I think, from the Joe and Charlie. I didn't make these up myself. I'm not that smart. It says, believe, willingness, investigation. Now, here's what AA is supposed to be doing. I don't know if it's doing it today or not, but this is how they did it in the old days. And that's why I started this meeting. Because they have the new member comes in. You see, the new member is surrounded by old members. Now, what makes you an old member? It's not the 42 years and the old timers and all that, although it's great. Mary has 41 years, God bless her. I'm not saying that's bad. But old members are people who worked the steps. They had done the deal. Because Bill was only, what, 3.5 years, three? He was sober 6 months when he went to Dr. Bob. You see, old members are people who have done it, and it has supports through hope, strength, and experience the new member. So the new member will believe that there is a solution. That's what AA did for me. When I met Cliff, the reason I went up to him that Saturday morning, they tricked me. Have you ever been tricked? His wife worked for the Kansas Medical Association. They were helping me get, you know, settled in the recovery and all this stuff. And she was the secretary, and I told her I was going to go to, it was a Friday, I was going to go to the Saturday morning meeting at the 2100 Club, and I was going to go there. I went the week before. She says, well, my husband goes there ever so often. I didn't know that he lived there and played cards every day in the basement, right, Jimmy? Because he was retired. So I go there, and there's this guy sitting like where Corey is for me, and he talked about how when he came in, he cried and this and that. I said, this guy really, he seems like really a nice man. Now, you won't believe it, but I'm very shy. I really am, a very shy and introverted, except in most situations. but for me, I went up to him after the meeting, and I asked him if he would help me. Now, I hadn't planned on that. But I knew I needed help, and I just wanted a regular guy, somebody who had done it, and he obviously something had happened to him. When you met Cliff, Jimmy will tell you, you knew that he had had a solution. He was a great guy. Well, it wasn't until 5 years later that I realized that Marianne sent him there. You get it? Yeah, I'm not that smart. But I believed, and I was willing. I was willing to do anything. And then I investigated, and then I picked up the simple kit of spiritual tools. You see that toolbox? And then that changed. I worked the steps. It revolutionized my whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, towards God, universe. And I have a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism most of the time. And then I become an old member. So when I started this meeting, and then I'll end with this, my hope was after my son died of the drug overdose, that I would go through the book like Joe and Charlie did, and then people would know what's in here, so they would do it. And then they would take somebody else through the book, and they wouldn't have to die. That's what God told me to do. That's why I can't stop doing it. It's God's will for me. And I see people here now, Corey sponsoring, Stu's sponsoring. Grady's sponsoring, Jimmy's got 2 sponsees here. Look at it around the room. And so it works. And so that's where I'm going to end up, and I'm going to pick up with this next week. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right.